This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest is Timothy Ryback, author of the new book Rock Around the Block, a history of rock music in Eastern Europe and the Soviet Union.
Rock and roll!
It's a 1978 recording of the Romanian rock band Iris. Since the end of World War II, Soviet bloc governments have condemned Western youth culture as a form of spiritual poison. Governments tried to eradicate rock and roll. Some musicians were even sent to prison, but rock music continued to be played. Many Americans are aware of the role that dissident writers have played in the democracy movements in Eastern Europe. In fact, writer Václav Havel is the new president of Czechoslovakia. I asked Timothy Ryback about the importance of rock music in Eastern Europe's current move towards democracy.
I think probably the best way to begin this was with a quote from a prominent Soviet who in May of 1987 condemned rock and roll music as a form of ideological AIDS. And he lamented at this time, saying that unfortunately we have no cure for this at this time. I think this AIDS metaphor is very good because in the course of the past 30 years, rock and roll has contributed significantly to the destruction of what you might call the ideological immune system in Eastern Europe and the Soviet Union. A year and a half ago, in 1988, you saw a complete collapse of official resistance to rock and roll music in virtually every East European country. This has been followed a year and a half later in the past 2 or 3 months, has been played out. What was played out in the ideological sphere has now played itself out in the political realm. And although you cannot, say rock and roll music is responsible for the collapse of communism, the Soviets themselves admit that rock and roll has significantly undermined the ideological commitment of young people. And I would argue that it's almost invested them with a sense of civil disobedience. Rock and roll, it's a rebellious type of music. It's a liberating type of music. And people have, there was a wonderful editorial in the New York Times earlier this week by a man from the Center for Security Studies. And he's used this phrase, in Eastern Europe, it's Leninism, not Leninism. And I think you have throughout all of Eastern Europe this abandoning of ideological commitment and its displacement by rock and roll and rock culture. I argue in the book that rock and roll music is unquestionably the most pervasive form of mass culture, from what used to be the cusp of the Berlin Wall to the dockyards of Vladivostok.
There's really been a long history of banned music in Eastern Europe. Jazz was banned under the Nazis because it was black music and because they thought it sounded Jewishly gloomy. Then jazz was banned under Stalin. Stalin died in 53, just in time for rock and roll. Was there always an anti-rock and roll policy in the Soviet bloc?
And the Soviets objected, or I guess the communist ideologists objected to rock and roll on three levels. The first was the aesthetic, the second was the moral, and the third was ideological. And in these first two accounts, there isn't really a great deal of difference between the polemics that were hurled against rock and roll in the United States at that time and in the Soviet Union. There's a wonderful comparison. In March of 1957, the Catholic Church in America banned rock and roll from their schools, condemning it for its tribal rhythms and brutality. 1 month later, Dmitry Shepalov, who was the former Soviet minister, a foreign minister, denounced rock and roll as, quote, an explosion of the basest instincts and sexual urges. And so, in one sense, the objection to rock and roll was virtually identical to the objections to rock and roll in the West. However, in the Soviet Union and in Eastern Europe, the ideological element came into play as well, and they saw this as a form of ideological subversion. Probably the most explicit example was following Elvis Presley's induction into the military in March of 1958. Suddenly in the Soviet media, you saw all of these condemnations of NATO as employing rock and roll music in its war against the Soviet bloc, the socialist community. This accusation, in fact, has some basis. I have a NATO document from November of 1958 that calls explicitly for the use of rock music in subverting the youth of the Soviet bloc. So it was used very consciously in the ideological war at that time.
Well, Elvis was inducted into the Army in 1958, and that's the same year that the recording we're about to hear was made. And this is the earliest Eastern European rock recording that you have in your collection. It's called Mr. Rock and Mr. Roll. Tell us a little bit about the song and who wrote it and performs it.
It was written, the lyrics and music were written by a songwriting team named Suchi and Schlitter. The song, as you mentioned, was written in 1958, is, as far as I've been able to determine, the earliest, not only the earliest recording, but the earliest example of an original rock and roll tune coming out of Eastern Europe or the Soviet Union. The song begins by, the lyrics are, "We don't know who they are, we don't know where they come from, Mr. Rock and Mr. Roll, but wherever they go, chairs are broken and windows are smashed." Then it goes in and chronicles all of this destruction that takes place in these concert halls and ends with the phrase, "Mujem, Mujem, who's to blame, who's to blame, Mr. Rock, Mr. Roll, Mujem, Mujem, Mr. Rock and Mr. Roll."
Well, let's listen to it, recorded in 1958 in Prague.
Nikdo neví, kdo to je, Mr. Rock a Mr. Roll, nedají nám pokoje, Mr. Rock a Mr. Roll, všude ty dva zvou, a tam, kde ti dva jsou, a tam se ničí, jen co vyčí, vše, co padne do rukou, když pak za čas vychladnou, mozky, mozky, ze stolů a židlí jsou trosky, trosky, a hned se začne řešiti, kdo to bude platiti, a budete se diviti, ale nikdo nechce s tím nic mít.
Timothy Ryback is my guest, and he's the author of the new book Rock Around the Block, A History of Rock Music in Eastern Europe and the Soviet Union. Can you describe some of the different techniques governments used over the years in their war against rock and roll?
They have employed just about every means at their disposal in an attempt to combat rock and roll music. The first attempts came in the late 1950s with the introduction of what were called 60-40 clauses, which required that 60% of any music performed publicly or in any music hall or restaurant be of socialist origin. The other 40% could come from the West as long as it was permitted by the censors. Well, what you found happening was that whenever someone from the government or from some agency were present, they would adhere to these 60-40 clauses, but as soon as they were gone, you know, they would just pick up and start playing rock and roll tunes. And a lot of times it was very typical that after midnight, they would sort of abandon all forms of socialist music and just, you know, let loose with the latest hits from the West, be it, you know, Bill Haley's Rock Around the Clock or the latest Buddy Holly or Elvis Presley hit. The other techniques that they employed were somewhat more brutal. You had the use, for example, in November of 1965, East Germany's most popular rock band was disbanded on charges of tax evasion. Because they weren't allowed to play officially, they were holding concerts and charging people, but they were subsequently collecting revenues. But because this was quote unquote an illegal activity, they were not paying taxes, and the government eventually caught them on tax evasion charges and disbanded them. The young people of Leipzig estimated that between 1 and 2,000 people assembled in November of that year in central Leipzig, demanding that the government rescind its ban, the city government rescind its ban on this group. The government sent in water cannons, attack dogs, and this rock riot and subsequent brutal suppression has been chronicled by numerous people. Once again, as far as I've been able to determine, this is the earliest example of a rock and roll riot in all of Eastern Europe.
I think it's fair to say that throughout the 60s and 70s and 80s, there's been this kind of split in rock music in the Eastern Bloc countries between the officially sanctioned bands and the underground bands. I want to play a comparison of each, and this is from 1972. There are two bands from East Germany. Do you want to tell us their names and what these two bands represent in that split between official and underground?
Okay, when Erich Honecker came to power in 1971, his predecessor was a man named Walter Ulbricht, who was a real heavy-handed Stalinist type leader. And Honecker introduced a liberalization in East Germany, relatively speaking, in which some concessions were made to the young people on the rock scene. The premier state band that emerged from this form of state cultural engineering was a group called the Pudies, which played a very clean, slick, Western-styled music. You hear tones of the Kinks and the Beatles in their songs. At the same time, however, because they became official, a lot of young people rejected this band, and their counterpart was a group called Rempft from the industrial city of Leipzig, and it was a much more hands-on, gutsy type of rock and roll. And you had in the early 70s rock fans who were either in favor of the Pudies or in favor of Rempft, and they basically played out this classic battle between the good boys of rock and roll, who were the Beatles, and the bad boys, who were the Rolling Stones. And the two songs that we have, the two examples that I have here, one is from the first rock and roll recording ever released in East Germany. It's this the Pudies album. The other is an unofficial recording of a live Rempft concert made in Leipzig in 1972, basically at the same time.
So it's first the Pudies and then Rempft.
And then Rempft, yes.
Here we go.
Time.
East German bands recorded in 1972, and my guest is Timothy Rybak, author of the new book Rock Around the Block, A History of Rock Music in Eastern Europe and the Soviet Union. It seems that there have been countries off and on in the Eastern Bloc who've tried to allow rock because they thought it would be a good release valve for the tensions of youth, but that kind of thing never seemed to last too long.
The best example for the attempt to co-opt rock music or use it as a social pressure valve was in Poland in 1981 after martial law was instituted. They sensed a great deal of frustration and antagonism from the youth. What they did was to, while they were oppressing Solidarity, oppressing underground publications, they simply took the lid off the rock scene, with an attempt to allow a vent for youth frustration. The whole thing exploded in their faces because suddenly you found in Poland hundreds and hundreds of upstart punk rock bands with, and the names themselves, I think, reflect the tenor of the times. You know, Sewage, Plutonium Death, Pathology of Pregnancy. One group was called SS-20, you know, was a somewhat provocative name. It was based on the Soviet short-range nuclear missile. The government refused to print posters for this band, so they changed their name to Deserter, but used to appear in front of audiences shredding the party paper, screaming propaganda, and throwing it into the audiences, who, you know, naturally went absolutely wild.
We have a record here by Deserter, and the record is called Gray Reality. Would you introduce it to us, for us?
Okay. This song is called Gray Reality. It begins with a somewhat Hendrix-like variation, guitar solo on a classic Tchaikovsky theme, once again an affront to official culture. And then it's followed by the song Gray Reality, which is sort of, you know, get the hell out of here, get away from me, I don't care about anything, you know, I don't give a damn about anything.
Okay, this is the Polish punk band Deserter.
Oczy wskażę drogę!
My guest is Timothy Rybak, author of the new book Rock Around the Block, A History of Rock Music in Eastern Europe and the Soviet Union. Now that several countries in Eastern Europe have new governments and more freedom than they did before, what do you think the change is going to be in the rock music scene? So many of the bands had this anti-government identity. Do you think they have to change their music or change their identity to still have the same meaning that they had before?
The events of the last 2 months have really put the entire rock scene in an incredible state of crisis in Eastern Europe. A lot of the bands have simply dissolved because they were based on the whole idea of being in opposition to the state. And you found also that now that people are able to express themselves politically by other means, be it in the press, be it through demonstrations, a certain amount of energy has been taken out of the rock scene. And it is very much in a state of crisis. It will be interesting to see how it proceeds from here. The Soviet Union is a completely other animal. Of all of the East European countries, with the exception of Romania, they were the most oppressive in their attitudes toward rock and roll culture. Consequently, an official rock culture never developed there, which means that there are no institutions for dealing with rock music. And I was recently at a conference in Glasgow, Scotland, where they brought Soviet music industry people together with music industry officials from the West, or officials, what am I saying, music industry people from the West, to try to figure out ways of developing a proper rock culture there. What has happened is the rock culture has basically become like the Wild West was in the 1840s in this country, because rock bands no longer have, are no longer unofficial, but there are no official organs for dealing with them, meaning the whole idea of record contracts, the whole idea of a group being contracted to a manager. And you have bands now where a manager will own a band and another manager will try to buy that band away. What the other manager will do who's been slighted, he will send thugs out to break the legs of the other manager. There was a recent account in which a band was about to go on tour, and a former manager of the group simply kidnapped the lead singer and kept him locked away for a week. And so the rock scene in the Soviet Union at this point is completely out of control.
I want to go out with something by the East German group Pankow, who you call one of the best groups in the Soviet bloc. Just tell us a few words about them.
Okay. Pankow is unquestionably the greatest rock and roll band in all of Eastern Europe. They are politically provocative, they are musically innovative, and their stage presence is absolutely brilliant.
Timothy, thanks a lot for talking with us. Timothy Rybak's book, Rock Around the Block, is published by Oxford University Press. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air, and this is Pankow.
Alle Lichter gehen auf. Alle Fernseher gehen aus. Gute Nacht. Alle Seelen gehen aus. Gute Nacht. Auch das Licht im Treppenhaus.